Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Chet Amud Aleph, 7 lines down. The Gemara here is discussing the Mishnah's point that says that nafla legina, that if the animal falls into the garden, v'nehenit, and it gets benefit, mishalemet mashe nehenit, then it only pays for the hana'ah that it garnered, and not for the nehezek or the nezek that it did. So we saw that Rav already qualified that and said that v'nechbita, that's when the impact of the animal was cushioned by the vegetation that was there. And then we concluded yesterday that both the hana'ah that he gets from the cushioning of the impact, as well as what he eats in the sadeh, both of those he pays, mashinanit, he pays what he gets the hana'ah from, but he does not pay for the hezek. So now the Gemara wants to know, what exactly was the scenario here? Heichi nofo. How exactly did this animal fall into this gina? How did he end up inside this gina? It tripped or slipped on its urine and fell into the gina. Rav amar shedachafta chaverta, that its friend pushed it in there. It was knocked in by his friend. Manda amar shedachafta chaverta, the one who says that it was pushed in by another animal, certainly if it slipped on its urine, that's a bigger onus. That's something where, what could he have anticipated? It is something that he could not have thought of up front, and therefore, of course, it is an onus that he fell in that manner. On the other hand, the one who says that he slipped on the urine, on the other hand, if it was pushed in by another ox, pasha, that is negligence. Then the owner has to pay for all the damage that's not that is done, not simply the hana'ah that was gotten from falling into this area and what was eaten by the animal. Da'amarlei, because the Bala Sadeh can say to the Bala Shor, who fell in and was knocked in by the other shore, you should have gone single file. The fact that you were walking with more than one animal over this area that has a cliff on the side, that led or precipitated the problem here, because then one animal knocked the other animal into the field down below. And that was a pshia, negligence by the Balim, to allow such a situation to develop. They should have made sure that they crossed one at a time, or that they didn't walk next to each other, and then this would have never have happened. So there was the possibility of anticipating such a problem if you allow the animals to cross in such a manner. And therefore, he says, only if it slips on his urine is it considered to be ones, is it considered to be a nefila down to the sadeh below. But if it was pushed in there, that's already more of a negligence of the Balim in the shmirah. Amar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says, as far as the animal falling in being cushioned, Rav already told us you pay mashinanit. After that, the animal gets up and starts to eat. We also said for that hana'ab shein, you only pay the hana'ah, not the hezek. Rav Kahana says that lo shano ela ba'oto aruga. That's only true if it eats in the area that it fell into. Aval me'aruga le'aruga mishalemet mashizika. If it moves from this patch to the next patch, or moves from this field to the next field, then he will pay for the hezek, not just for the hana'ah. The reason being, as the Balei HaTosafot say, is kevan detchilat nefilata b'ota aruga b'ones, enu chayav laluta me'ota aruga. Since the animal landing there or falling into that patch was b'ones, then there's no obligation on the Balim to get him out or to remove him immediately. Aval me'aruga l'aruga habei k'stei acher. But when it moves from one field to the next field, it's the equivalent of stay acher, and that is the requirement for you to be chayav by shein and regel, is ubier b'stei acher, that he does it in another field. Here, the other field means normally not reshut rabim, but privately owned property. Here, because the animal fell in there by an ones, even the first field is also not a stay acher. Only once he moves from that field to the adjacent field or the adjacent garden does it consider to be stay acher, according to Rav Kahana. Even if he moves from one patch to another patch, or one field to another field, afilu kol yom kulom, even it's going all day long, ad shetetzev etachzor ledat, until it leaves and returns ledat with the knowledge of the be'alim. So, as opposed to other types of nezek, it's called the bor, eish, and karen, where the nature of the nezek is the fact that either the person is doing it kavanatola azik, or it has intent to do damage, or it's an ones. Those are the two possibilities over there. With regards to shein v'regel, the actual damage that is done is separate from the realization or the actualization of the damage. The eating of the animal, or the stomp trampling of the animal, is the natural state of the animal. It's what the animal does. He's not intending to damage. He's not intending to do anything wrong. He's simply doing what instinctively he does do. The question by the cases of Shem v'Regel is how the animal ended up there, or how did the animal end up in this predicament? And that is, we had before, v'shilach and ubier. And we said it has to be ke'ein mav'ir or ke'ein v'shilach. It has to be that as if he literally led the animal in there, or as if he gave the animal to eat. So we require, in order to be culpable in these cases, we require the balim's, quote-unquote, participation in the animal, facilitating the ability of the animal to eat or to stomp or trample over here. Without that, they're not going to be chayav for shein v'regel. And so what Rabbi Yochanan basically says is, the animal landed in this circumstance through an ones. He landed in there. That's how he got there. Since he got there derech ones, you can never then obligate him for shein v'regel until you've now recreated the situation or changed that starting point. The way to do that is to leave this field and then return to the field with the dat balim, with the knowledge of the owners. Because if he leaves with the knowledge of the owners and then returns the knowledge of the owners, the second time when he goes back, that's not the filat ones, that's already as if he was vishilach or biyer, and that's why he's going to be chayav. On the other hand, when the animal's in there from a filat ones, anything that is a result of that or precipitated by that is governed by the entrance of the animal to the situation, which is ones. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says that will continue with him all day. And if the owners don't know about it, even Rabbi Kahana will agree that it will continue all day. But Rabbi Yochanan says even if the owners know about it, they are not obligated to pull him out because the way that he entered was ones, and therefore it's not considered as if he put it in there. Rabbi Kahana limits that and says that's only true in the patch that he fell into, but it's not true if he moves to the next patch. That already will consider it if the balim don't stop him at that point when they are aware of it. That's as if they sent him into the next field or allowed him to enter the next field. So the machloka between Rav Kahana and Rav Yochanan revolves around when is something called steacher. When already is it a new field and it is already considered as if the owner has sent him in there or he has given him the food to eat. So Rav Yochanan says, well, as long as you got there by ones, you can never re-enter, you can never change that circumstance until you re-enter in a different manner. That means as long as you stay in these fields, don't come out, then you are patur from nezek, only chayav in hana. On the other hand, if it exits and re-enters, that re-entrance resets what the considerations are here. On the other hand, for Rav Kahana, yes, when you first fall in, that's ones. But after a certain amount of duration that you've been there, and the fact that the balim don't intervene, that makes it as equivalent, or we deem it as if they have sent them into the remainder of the field, or the other areas that are adjacent to this field. So that's the machloket here between Rav Kahana and Rabbi Yochanan, as to the extent of the protection afforded by the nefilat ones over here. Now, Rav Papa says about this statement of Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rav Papa, lo teima shetetze ledat, v'takzor ledat, doesn't have to be that the animal exited with the knowledge of the balim, and re-enters the field with the knowledge of the balim, and became shetetze ledat, once it exits with the dat balim, afupish chazrash lo ledat. Even if it returns to the field without the knowledge of the balim are culpable in that case. My daima, the amarle, the balasadeh can say to the owner of the animal, kaven di alpha, now that it's learned what the good life is like, and it knows where to get food, kleimat dik mishtamto lahatam rahato. Anytime it slips out or escapes, it's going to run right there. It knows where to go to get a good meal now. It knows where to go to get good stuff now. So as soon as it breaks free again, it's going to be heading right in that direction. So for that reason, the Rashi says over here, you now require a higher standard of shmirah for the animal. Knowing that the animal has this knowledge, knowing that the animal's already experienced this good life, you now have to provide a higher level of shmirah for the animal so that it doesn't escape or try to get back there. If you simply provide just the shmirah pchuta like you did before, that will not suffice anymore. You will have to do now a full shmirah mu'la, or extra shmirah now, to protect the animal from going back to that same circumstance and eating over there. And if you don't, then you will be a posheya. And that's what Rav Papa is explaining within Rabbi Yochanan Shita, that the exiting has to be with the knowledge of the balim, but the re-entrance, you can assume that the animal re-enter there. That assumption will now make you or obligate you to give a higher level of shmirah, and if you don't do that, then you are a posheya if the animal re-enters even without your knowledge. If the animal descended in a normal fashion, it didn't fall in there, there was no ones, as we saw yesterday in the Balei Tosafot, that doesn't mean just if it walked down or it descended in a normal fashion. That's even if it fell in when it had the option to walk down in a normal fashion, because the Tosafot called that Tzklato B'Shiyah B'Sofa B'Ones over there. We saw that the Ravid argued on that in the Shita Tosafot, But according to the Shita Tosfot, it doesn't have to literally be that he descended, but just the option or the ability to descend is enough to be considered a pshia. In that case, he has to pay for all the damage that's done, not simply the hana'ah that the animal got. By Rabbi Yirmiyah, Yardake darka vezika v'meleida mahu. If the animal descended in a normal fashion, but then the animal either gave birth or miscarried in the field and damaged the crops there because of the birth or because of the miscarriage there in the field. So now, Aliba demanda amar tchilato b'shia v'sof b'onis chayav. According to one who says that, if you start out with the pshia and end up with an ones, that you're chayav, lo tibaylach. There's no question here, because it's clearly tchilato b'shia, because you allowed the animal to descend there, and the animal went into the field, that's a pshia. That is negligence to allow him to go there. Of course, the result and damage was caused by an ones, which is the animal giving birth, which is something you can't anticipate necessarily, or miscarrying. You would still be held culpable, not because of the ones, but because of the tchilato b'pshia. Ki dibaylach, the question really revolves around the one who says, Aliba demandamar tchilato b'pshia v'sof b'ones patur. The one who says that if you start with the pshia and it result in an ones in the end, that you are patur, in this case, maybe it should be different. My, mi amrinan came into tchilato b'pshia v'sof b'ones patur. Maybe here it's a classic case of tchilato b'pshia v'sof b'ones and you're patur, and therefore you would not be culpable. Odil mahocha kula pshiahu. But maybe here, the entirety of the thing is a pshia, it's negligence from beginning to end. The came into kachazi, the krevala, the melad, because he sees now that the animal is getting close to giving birth, he should have guarded it, ule istimure bigava, and then he should make sure to keep it close by or locked in, and to make sure that it doesn't ruin anything. And so therefore, according to this one who says, tchilatos pshia, sofobonis is pator, we really have to question whether it is tchilato b'shia v'sof bonis. Maybe it's kule p'shia. Now the truth is, even according to the other opinion, tchilato b'shia v'sof bonis, it's chayav. It also could be. You could formulate it here also that it's kula p'shia, but it has no nafkamina. Because for that opinion, tchilato b'shia v'sof bonis is chayav. Or if you say it's total p'shia, you're also chayav. So in either instance, you're going to be chayav, there's no nafkamina. On the other hand, for the one who says tchilato b'shia v'sof bonis is patur, there's a nafkamina. If you consider the birthing or the miscarriage in the field to be an ones, then it would be tchilato b'shia v'sof ones, and you'd be patur. The other hand, if you think of it as a pshia, because you see the animal is carrying in such a way that it's going to give birth very soon or shortly, then you also have an added obligation to stop the animal from causing damage through its birth process. And so therefore, you're not only a pshia by letting him go down, but even with the birthing in there and ruining the crops or whatever it is that's there, that you're also going to be a pushaya because you knew the animal was giving birth. You should have kept it at home. You should have kept it closed up. Gemara leaves that as a teiku, as an unresolved issue. And now, Gemara goes, Ketza Mishnah Lememet Mashizika. How do you pay for the damage that is done? The Mishnah itself gives a small insight into this, and now the Gemara is going to expound on that. The Mishnah says, Shamin Beitza'a Ba'oto Sadeh. You measure a Beitza'a in that field, Kam Haita Yafa, but Kam Hi Yafa. How much it was worth, and how much it is worth now. And then we had Rabbi Shimon who argued when you have peirot that are already ripened or do no longer need the trees or the items that they are growing on. So now the Gemara wants to understand this. We spoke about it on the Mishnah. There's Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, which again we'll discuss here. You can see the very large Tosafot over here discussing how to explain the Mishnah. There are three major opinions on how to view this or explain this Gemara. So we'll go through them one at a time. We'll start with Rashi's Pshat over here. Where it says, how do you know that this is the case? Amar of Matnot, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Ubier b'steacher. That he went ahead, here it means he did damage b'steacher, but now the Gemara is learning from that, b'steacher means malamei sheshamim agav steacher. That you assess the value based on another field. So b'steacher comes to teach you that another field is the determining standard for how much damage was done over here. So the Gemara says, v'hai ubier b'steacher mi'boyle lafukei rishut rabim. B'steacher, we need to teach you that you're not chayav for shein and regel in Rishut Rabin. Where it says, Imkein lichtov rachmanu b'yar b'steachavero. That he went ahead and did the damage in his friend's field. Inam isteacher, another field, my b'steacher. In or through another field, sheshamin agav sadeacher. That teaches you that not only is it that you're only chayav when you go into a private domain and not in the public domain, but also the way to assess the damage is done is through measuring it against a standard of another field. Gemara says, "Ve'ema kulu l'hachiyu da'ato." So now Gemara says, "Okay, that's the case. Maybe that's the whole reason for why it says ubir b'steacher to teach you about the measuring of the value or the damage that was done here. But lafuke rishut rabim minalan. Then, if that's the case, how do you know that rishut rabim is patur b'shem v'regel? Because you're using the be'er v'steacher for the assessment reasons. It says imken lechatvei rachmana gabei tashlumim. If that was the case, the Torah should have written it by the payments when you have to make restitution. It says meitav sadeu meitav karmo yishalem. You would have added it there. Why did the Torah write it by ubier? Why did it write it by the damage that is being done rather than by the compensation that is being made? If it was there to solely tell you about the fact that when you damage a field, you assess the damage against another benchmark of a field, then you should have written it by the tashlumim, by the restitution, the compensation that he makes, because that's the important part of where this becomes relevant. The fact that the Torah wrote it right by the beginning, ubier b'steacher, that comes to teach you that not only is it telling you that you have to assess it against the benchmark of another field, but also learn from that, that ubier is only b'steacher, that the bier is only when you do it in another field, meaning that when you don't do it in Rishut Rabim, but you do it in Izak's field, shmamita tarte. One anomaly is the fact that it wasn't written by the Tashlumim and it's written by the Ubier, by the damage. The second anomaly is that it's written with a bet instead of just written Steacher. Each anomaly teaches you one item. The anomaly of moving it from Tashlumim to Ubier by the damage teaches you the Ptur of Rishut Rabim. Anomaly of the fact that it says Bisteacher instead of Steacher teaches not only about the Ptur of Rishut Rabim, but it's also about the assessment of the damage that's done here. From that, we hear two different things. One thing is that you assess the field against the benchmark of another field, or the damage against the benchmark of another field. And number two is that you're only chayav v'shein regel in the chatzer or the sadeh nizak, and not in rishuta rabim. Mar says, heche shaminan. How do we do this assessment? So, am Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, sa'ah b'shishim sa'in. You do one sa'ah against a base of 60. Rabbi Yani Amar Tarkav b'shishim tarkavim. You do a tarkav. A tarkav is really three kav. A sa'ah is made up of six kav, so a tarkav is half a sa'ah against 60 half sa'im. So it's still 1 to 60, the ratio that we're speaking about here, just you're starting with a smaller denominator. In the case of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, your denominator is the 60 sa'ah, and the numerator is a sa'ah. Over here, the denominator is 60 half sa'ah, or 30 sa'ah is the denominator. And therefore, the numerator is a half sa'ah. It's still a ratio of 1 to 60, but your denominator is smaller. Chizki amar kelach b'shishim klachim. You measure one stock against 60 stocks. So here you have a three-way machloket as to what is the way or the method of assessment. Now, outside of that, we have a three-way machloket as to explain the methodology that is used here. Rashi, already in the Mishnah, says that why does the Mishnah write a beit sa'ah? Because that teaches you that you have to assess the value against a Beit Sa'ah, against a 60. So now, what Rashi explains over here is that there are actually two stages of valuation. There's a stage of valuation which says 1 against 60, because of the fact that we want to assess the proper value of a Beit Sa'ah. And that's what's being argued about over here, is how do we assess the value of a certain component or tract of land. Once we've then assessed what the value of that tract of land is, we also want you to assess, that's what the Mishnah says, it against the Beit Sa'ah. That then we want to take the damage against that Beit Sa'ah. And Rashi explains over here, the reason is because if you were to just speak about a Beit Sa'ah in isolation, a Beit Sa'ah is a very small tract of land, and it would sell for a very high premium or high price, because most people would not want to buy it. The only person who would want to buy it is an ani, a poor person. And that poor person would pay a premium to get that small piece of land because nobody really wants to sell that small piece and nobody else wants to really buy it. And so therefore, if you were just to assess the Beit Sa'ah alone or independently, you would end up overpaying for the Beit Sa'ah, or you would assess the value higher than its true value. So in order to mitigate that, we assess the Beit Sa'ah against a base of 60. And so that gives us the true value. We look at a field and say, if I have a field of 60 sa'ah, and then I have a field of 59 sa'ah, what's the differential in price? That differential in price will tell me what the value of a single sa'ah is, not in and of itself, but in the context of a larger field. That's number one. The second thing you do is then the animal did damage. And now that the animal did damage, I want to assess that damage. I don't say, let's calculate how much was damaged over here. Rather, I say, I take a Beit Sa'ah and I assess the value of a Beit Sa'ah with all of its produce on it. And then I assess the value of a Beit Sa'ah with the section that the animal ruined or ate and see what the diminishment in value is. So there are two assessments here, each one against a larger background or a larger benchmark, which is we first assess what the value of a Beit Sa'ah is against a background of 60 Sa'ah. And then afterwards, we assess the damage that you've done against a background of a Beit Sa'ah. That's the way Rashi explains it. You can see it in Rashi here. He says, Vim Tomar, Lamuzkar Beit Sa'ah. Why does the Mishnah mention a Beit Sa'ah if this Gemara over here is telling us you have to do one against 60? Shemayesh Shemim Mitchila Aruga B'Shishim Sa'im, Kama Yufin, Kama Hen Yafin, Lo Yamishalem Kum. Because if you assess the damage against the larger field, the 60 Sa'ah, say you say, okay, there's 60 Sa'ah here, and now I want to know how much this damage is against a field of 60 sa'ah. So I value how much is the field for 60 sa'ah? How much is the field for 60 sa'ah minus the damage that's done? She'ein karachat aruga ktana nikeret b'shishim sa'im. Shishim sa'im is such a large tract of land. It's so big that it would almost make irrelevant any damage that was done by the animal. Aval b'beit sa'ah nikeret. If you measure the damage against the beit sa'ah, then it has significance and it will be noticed. So the reason the Gemara has to go through these two stages of assessment is the first assessment is to get the right value of a Beit Sa'ah. That it can only do in the context of a much larger tract of land of 60 Sa'ah. Once I've gotten that value of the Beit Sa'ah, now I can look at the Beit Sa'ah without the Nezek in it and a Beit Sa'ah with the Nezek in it and then assign a value to the Nezek that was done. I can't just go Nezek against 60 Sa'ah because the Nezek is so de minimis compared to the 60 Sa'ah that it would become worthless. It would be, someone would actually probably not change their price for that. On the other hand, if I just assess the damage independently, I would over-assess the value of the damage because you need to look at the damage in the context of which it is growing and the field that it is found in. So for that reason, Rashi sees here a two-staged assessment that is taking place, one which is described in the Mishnah of Beit Sa'ah, and the other one that is assigned here by the Machloket as to how you assess the larger tract. So therefore, Rashi says, according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, we assess the value of a sa'ah, and then we look at the nezek versus that beit sa'ah. According to Rabbi Yanai, we assess the half a sa'ah, and then after we've assessed the value of half a sa'ah, then assess the nezek against that half sa'ah. Obviously, for Rabbi Yanai, the Mishnah is going to be difficult to read, because the Mishnah says beit sa'ah, and he says it doesn't mean beit sa'ah literally, it means half a sa'ah. Chizkiah says that we always look at 1 against 60. We just look at the amount of damage, and then we multiply the amount of damage by 60, and that becomes the benchmark against which we measure things. It's all 60 against 1, and that's how you measure it. That is Rashi's Shita. The difficulty in Rashi's Shita is obvious, which is, where do you ever see two assessments over here? The Mishnah and the Gemara never mention anything about a dual-leveled assessment. They mention a single assessment of the Nezek that's done here. According to Rashi, you're making two levels of assessment. And for that reason, you can see in the Balei Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim, they are critical of Rashi's explanation because of this dual assessment. Now, the difference between the different opinions here, according to Rashi, has to do with how to get to the fairest value in assessing the damage that's here. Rabbi Yanai, who says you use a tarkav or half a sa'ah, is because ein konim mitzuyim l'shishim sa'im. He says there are very few buyers for 60 sa'ah. That's such a large tract of land. L'fishim rubim ein la'adam benuni. It's too much for middle-class people. U'ma'atim ein l'mishupam mitzachim. But it's too little for someone who's rich. It's stuck in between those, the middle-class people that would buy a field and the very wealthy people that would buy a field. So it's not big enough for a wealthy person, but it's not small enough for a benuni. And therefore, that would diminish the value of a 60 sa'ah field. And therefore, you're going to get the wrong assessment. So he says, that's why you use a tarkav. And then, obviously, Chizkiah says, that's still too big. And you have to assess the 60 times against the actual damage that's done to get a fair assessment. The Balei HaTosafot argue on Rashi. And obviously, the key element of their argument is that there's only one assessment over here and not two assessments. And therefore, what they suggest over here is that the only assessment that is done is to assess whether it's a Beit Sa'ah, or Tarkav, or 60 against 1. What the Balei Tosafot would say is you measure a Sa'ah versus a 60 Sa'ah field. Now you've gotten the value that you need to know in terms of a Sa'ah. But why are you using a Sa'ah? The damage that was done here was less than a Sa'ah. So why are you using a Sa'ah? So what Balei HaTosafot suggests over here is that you basically upgrade the amount of damage to the size of a sa'ah. And we assume that the animal did a sa'ah worth of damage, and now we assess it against a field of 60 sa'ah. Once we then assess what that damage is, you just now shrink it or give a percentage for how much was really damaged. So let's say, for instance, out of a beit sa'ah, there's 6 kav in a sa'ah. The animal damaged 1 kav. So when you go to assess the damage, you don't say, oh, what's 1 kav against 60 sa'ah? You say, here, what's 1 sa'ah if he damaged 1 sa'ah of this field against the 60 sa'ah field? Basically, you say a field with 60 sa'ah versus 59 sa'ah of tvu'ah or vegetation on it. What's the difference in value? That will give you the value of a sa'ah worth of damage. Then the animal did a kav worth of damage, then you multiply it by a sixth to get the amount of damage that was done. Rashi really requires 2 full assessments against a benchmark. Here, Tosfot only requires 1 assessment, and then you just multiply by the proportional amount of damage that was done. That's not an assessment. That's simply a determination of what the actual quantity of damage that was done. So then, that's the shita of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Yanai says the same thing, but he just says it with the tarkav. He says that you measure the damage as if there was 3 kavin, or half a sa'ah worth of damage against a 30 sa'ah field. And then you proportionally multiply it by the percentage of real damage that was done here versus a tarkav to get the value. And again, Chizkiyah in this case will still say it's 160. 60 times the amount of damage that's done. That is how you do the relative assessment over here. That is the shita of the Balei HaTosafot. In addition to that, we mentioned this already on the Mishnah, they explain the word Beit Sa'ah in the Mishnah differently than Rashi. That's what the Ri says down here. The Ri suggests that the Beit Sa'ah of the Mishnah is not your standard or classic definition of Beit Sa'ah, which is the amount of field that you can plant a Sa'ah's worth of seeds in, which is a very large tract of land and produces quite a bit of output, and would be too much for an animal to damage or to eat. And therefore, he thinks this is a Beit Sa'ah means a Sa'ah, not a Beit Sa'ah, meaning the area of a Sa'ah, but simply a Sa'ah worth of produce. And even though it uses the word bait, it doesn't mean it literally, it just means a sa'ah worth of produce, which is a reasonable amount of vegetation or produce that an animal could eat or damage. And so therefore he thinks that in the Mishnah, it doesn't mean, like Rashi thinks, that bait sa'ah, which is a measurement of a tract of land, an area of land, but rather bait sa'ah is just a sa'ah worth of fruits or produce that came out of the field. Even Tosfot himself is not so comfortable with that explanation of the Ri, but there's also a difference between Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot here. The other possibility of explanation over here is brought by the other Rishonim in the shame of the Rabbeinu Chananel. And the Rabbeinu Chananel says there's a minimum standard by which you do a relative assessment. And that is, until you cross the threshold of a sa'ah, then you just assess the damage for what it is. You say, if it's less than a sa'ah, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says you assess the damage. You just assess the damage as it is at its face value. Once you've already crossed the threshold of a sa'ah, then you take the damage relative to a field of 60 sa'ah. So once you've already reached an amount that is significant enough to assess it against a benchmark, then we allow you to do that, and we say that that threshold is a sa'ah, and the benchmark is 60 times that sa'ah, which is 60 sa'ah. So then you'll use a field of 60 sa'ah once you've crossed over a sa'ah worth of damage. Rabbi Yanai disagrees and says that the threshold is not a sa'ah, but rather a tarkav, half a sa'ah. When you're under half a sa'ah, then there is no relative assessment. Is it just the assessment of the damage itself? Once you've already crossed over a half sa'ah, then it's relative to 30 sa'ah. And again, Chizkiyah always says it's always relative to 60 times the amount of damage that's done. Now obviously the number 60 here is no different than anywhere else in Shas, which is that 60 was the base system of the Babylonians, and 60 was seen to be a very large number, almost like today, if you'd say, sometimes the Gemara uses it 1,000 times, or today we'd say, if it's 1,000,000 times, some sort of number that already engendered a large, large amount, in which everything else became insignificant, and that's why it's used for Batel B'Shishim, it's also used by Kashrut, here it's also, this idea of Shishim, is a large scale by which to measure things. It's that we call it the biggest scale or the largest scale you would measure a benchmark against. So those are the 3 different possibilities or opinions about how to explain this Gemara and the assessment that we're speaking about here. So meitave, achla kav o kabayim. If the animal ate a kav or kabayim, ain omrim tishalem dmehem. We don't say pay their intrinsic value. El ruinota kiluhi arugaktana. We look at it as if it's a little patch. Umisharinota. and then we assess it. My lav, what does that mean? That we assessed it, bifnei atzma, that you do it according to that. You just look at the little patch that it's found in, and you assess it within the context of that little patch that it's found in. That would be a question old of the opinions over here, because all the opinions over here seem to require a multiple or a multiplier of 60. Whatever the numerator, denominator is, changes, but you still need a multiplier of 60. On the other hand, this brightness seems to indicate that you look at it as if he arugaktana, it's a small little garden, and then you assess it based on the fact that it's a small garden. So that would be a question to all of them. Lamar says, lo, bishishim. It doesn't mean that you do it against the small garden as if that's like some small tract of land, but rather it's 60 times. And that's the explanation here. Now that fits best according to Chizkiah, who says that the whole assessment here is 60 times, and this bright would be very supportive of Chizkiah, and that's why the Rif Paskins like Chizkiah here. On the other hand, the Gemara does not see it as a question on the other two Shitot, because we're already emending or reinterpreting the Braita to fit. So if you're already reinterpreting the Braita, that means you can open it up to a bigger reinterpretation. You can make it fit the other two Shitot as well. So therefore, the Gemara doesn't bring this as a question on the Shita of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, or Rabbi Yanai. Tanu Banan, Ein Shamin Kav Bipnei Shemashbicho. You don't assess it based on a kav, because otherwise you over-account for it. Velo Beit Kor Mipnei Shepogmo. Or we don't assess it against the Beit Kor, because then you under-assess it. My Kamar, what is meant by this breakdown? So Amar Papa Achi Kamar, this is the explanation. Ein Shamin Kav B'Shishim Kavim. You do not assess a kav against a benchmark of 60 kav. Mipnei Shemashbiach Mazik. Because then you help out the Mazik over there. Because within the context of 60 kav, then one kav is just too small or not meaningful. As Rashi says over here, the shishim kavim ein lehem mecher. When you go to sell 60 kav, you're not going to find buyers. It's too big for a poor person to buy. Uma'atin lebeinoni. And it's too small for a middle class person to buy. Bakoshka nashir. Certainly nashir is not going to be interested in this type of tract of land. Va'od she'en karachat kav nikeret b'shishim kavim. And also a damage of kav within 60 kav is not noticeable. If you have 59 kav or 60 kav, you're not going to notice that differential, and therefore you're going to underestimate the assessment of nezek, and that's the benefit of the mazik. Below kor b'shishim kurim, you also do not mention a kor against 60 kor, mipnei shepogem mazik. Because over there it hurts the mazik, it actually helps the nizak, because in that case, as Rashi says over here, nobody buys 60 kor. A kor is the equivalent of 30 sa'ah. So if you have a place or a location that's 60 kurim, that's already 1,800 sa'ah. So that's a very, very large tract of land. And only very wealthy people will pay for it. And not only will they pay for it, they'll pay a premium for it. Because they are looking for these types of large tracts of land, which are hard to come by. And therefore, if you have that type of large tract, people will pay a premium for it. And so if that's the case, you're going to over-assess the value of a kor. In addition, if you're missing a kor, a kor is a significant amount. It's 30 sa'ah worth of area that is now not planted or ruined. So a kor is significant. So if you told me something is 59 kor versus 60 kor, that'd be a noticeable difference, and then you're going to overestimate the damage that's done to the detriment of the mazik. So we don't allow you to do it in too big a benchmark. And we don't let you do a too small a benchmark, because in each case it will either favor the mazik or be to the detriment of mazik. We're trying to get to the fair value. So matki v'lo ravuna bar manoach, hai v'lo beit kor, v'lo kor mi ba'ile. In order to be right, or to explain the breita in the way that you do, then language in the breita should have been consistent. The breita says, ein shamin kav, and then it says, v'lo beit kor. So there's an inconsistency between the kav in the resha and the beit kor in the seifa. The way that you're explaining it, it should have said, ein shamin kav, b'pnei shemashbicho, Velo kor mipnei shepogmo. It should have used the same structure both in the resha and the seifa. The fact that it doesn't already shows you that your explanation doesn't make sense. It used beit kor and not kor, and therefore your explanation cannot be that the same way we look at kav, we look at kor. Elam ravuna bar manoach mishmei de rabacha brei de ravika hochiktani. This is what is meant here. Ein shamin kav bifnei atzmo. You do not assess a kav by itself. Mipnei shemazbiach nizak. Because then you actually help the nizak, and you hurt the mazik. If you were to assess the value of the kav of damage in and of itself, you're going to over-assess the value of the damage here. V'lo kav b'beit kor, but you can also not assess a kav in the context of a beit kor, v'nei shepogem nizak, Because then you hurt the nizak and you benefit the mazik because you've now taken a kav versus the context of 60 kor, that makes it completely insignificant. And since it's so insignificant in that amount, you're going to barely assess the damage, if at all, or if you're going to assess the damage. So we don't want the benchmark to be too small, which means that we don't just assess a kav itself, because then you're going to over-assess the damage. We don't want the benchmark to be too big, because then you're going to underestimate the damage, because it's going to be insignificant relative to the benchmark. Ela b'shishim. We do it with 60 times. Again here, this supportive of Chizkiah's shita, that it's 60 times, is the real benchmarking here, not a fixed amount of a sa'ah or a tarkav. Nevertheless, again, the Gemara doesn't ask from this on the other opinion, because we're already amending the Braita or trying to understand the Braita. It's not clear that this is a clear and absolute explanation of the Braita, and therefore we can't ask on the other opinions. How gavra the katz kashba mechabre? So this individual went ahead and cut down a kashba, which Rashi says over here was a dekel, is a palm tree. The Aruch over here says that kashba, it is a dikla parsa. It is a Persian palm tree, which came at a premium or was worth more. Some suggest that a kashba is an older date tree, an older palm tree. Whereas we're going to see in a second, a talata is a younger palm tree. Those are the three possibilities as how to explain this word. All of them agree that it's speaking about a palm tree. Just a question of what type of palm tree are we referring to? Is it simply just a generic palm tree? Or is it a older palm tree? Or is it a Persian palm tree? So now, he cut this down in his friend's field. After the Kamei Deresh Galuta, they went before the exilarch in order to have the case adjudicated. Amalei, the Didi Chazali, I saw it, the Resh Galuta says. I saw that tree, and it was amongst other trees. Utlata talota bekina havu kaime. And I saw that there were three palm trees in that area. And Vavu Shavu Me'azuze. And they're worth 100 zuz. I mean, the three of those palm trees together are worth 100 zuz. This guy went in and cut one of the three palm trees. Zil Havalate, Tlatin Vitlata Vitilta. Go pay him 33 1/3. You pay him 1/3 of 100 zuz because the entire three palm trees were worth 100 zuz. You damaged or you destroyed one of them. So now you pay 1/3 of the value, and that's 33 1/3. Amar Gabe Resh Galuta. The Dain Dine de Parsa Lomali says, what do I need to be hanging out or being adjudicated cases in front of the exilarch when he does this based on the Persian rules? So the way Rashi learns it simply is that he was using the Persian rules of damage and he's assessing the damage at its face value. They were worth 100. He cut down one of the three. He's going to pay for 1/3 of the damage, but not necessarily following the rules of the Din Torah, or the way that you assess it based on the Torah. So he was complaining about the fact that he ended up in front of the exilarch, who does not know how to adjudicate the case based on Dinei Torah. There are others who suggest that he was complaining about the fact that he was assessing the value based on a Persian dekel, which we'll see later on. A Persian dekel, because of its significance, might stand out by itself, and you might assess individually or separately. And so his complaint was is that these are just regular palm trees, but he was claiming that it was a Persian palm tree, and therefore you would assign it a value independently, and you would assess its value independently. And that's what he's complaining about. If you do explain the Gemara this way, then the word kasba before could not be explained as a Persian dekel, because that's what he was complaining about here, that he was assigning as a Persian dekel, and that would be against the Oruch's explanation before that it was a Persian dekel. So after the Kamei de Rabbi Nachman, so instead of having the case adjudicated before the exilarch, he goes to Rabbi Nachman. Rav Nachman, who has connections to the Resh Galuta, because he was married into the family of the Resh Galuta, but was a dayan, a very significant dayan. Amalei b'shishim, he says, you don't assess the value independently. You look at it in the context of 1 to 60. And so you have to assess the damage that's on here against a background or benchmark of 60. So Amalei Rova, Rova says to Rav Nachman, im amru niviniske mimono, yomru beniske gufo. This whole idea of relative assessment against a benchmark of 60 times, is only true when it's mamonoa mazik. It's when your possessions do damage. Since your possession did damage, we are then assigning or we are assessing the damage based on, we'll call it a fair assessment of what is done. On the other hand, if you individually, physically do the damage, it's not your possession that does the damage, but rather you who did the damage, over there, we are going to penalize you to the fullest extent of the law. Here you went into someone else's property and did damage via dayim. We want to then throw everything at you, not just the quote-unquote fair value. We want to take the highest value possible that we can from you in order to dissuade you from acting in this manner, but also to penalize you for the fact that you went ahead and destroyed someone else's property via daim. That's an interesting distinction that you're making, Rava, but where do you ever see such a distinction? The Tanya, you're going to suggest, so Abaye speculates as to what the reasoning behind Rava's shita is, that when it's mazik biyadayim, when a person does the Ezreel Nezik, that the assessment should be done differently than when it's done by his possessions. The Tanya, hamavkir karmo shel chaveiro, someone who destroys, ruins the vineyard of his friend, smadar ro'im oto kama hayta yafa kodem lechen. If it was at the point of time that it was a smadar is machloket in the Rishonim, it has actually important significance with regards to the matnot of the truma and the masrot, but a smadar is either when the tree has already blossomed and it's in full blossom, or it is right when the blossoms fall off, or it's right as the fruit emerges, right after the blossom has fallen off. So somewhere in that range of time between the point of the blossom and the beginning of the fruit, that's what's called a smadar. So now, if the vineyard that he ruined was at the point of time already where the fruits were at the stage of being a smadar, so we look at it, how much was it worth beforehand, and how much is it worth now? There it doesn't say 60 times. So what we are speculating is, according to Abaye, is that that brayta that doesn't use a relative benchmark of 60 is saying that by direct damage of an individual, we don't do this relative benchmarking against 60. That's only true by his possessions, but by himself, here we ruin the kerem, we won't do that 60 times thing. Abaye says, he says, even by your possessions, by your animal that does damage, don't we have a similar presentation of the information or formulation that doesn't include 60 times, and we still assume that it is 60 times? The Tanya. We have another brayta. Kitma nitiya. If it nipped off, it cut off a nitiya, is a long, young sapling that was growing, the animal bit it off or ate it, and so it's no longer there. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Gozrig Zerot Shibirushalayim, those that instituted laws inside of Yerushalayim, meaning that civil codes or civil laws, the Gemara in Ketubot says that that refers to Admon v'Chanan ben Avshalom. So it is said, Nitiya bachnata, if it is a sapling that is 1 year old, Shtei Kesef, we have a fixed assignment of value of Shtei Kesef, bachtei shanim, if it's 2 years old, Arba Kesef, then 4 dinarim. Achla chaziz, if the animal ate the produce, the tvuah, the grains, while they were still the green, while they had not hardened yet or turned brown when they are still in their green state, Rabbi Yossi Aglil Omer, Nidon b'mishuyar shebo, we assess it based on what that which remains, meaning that we look at what this field produces in the end, and then we say what it would have produced had it not been ruined. So you have here, say, a large tract of land. A portion of it was destroyed. The remainder then grows. So what you do is you say, this is the value of the field, and then I just figure out the area that he damaged, how much it could have produced based on the final production of this field, and then he'll pay for that nezek. That it's all relative. We look at how much it was worth before, and how much is it worth now, meaning that we always assess these things with the underlying land. We compare the item together with the land when it was in a state that was before it was destroyed, and then when it's a state after it was destroyed. Whereas the Chachamim say that we look at the current state of the field, and we say that how much would someone pay for the current state of the field with and without the item that was damaged? Because there's still risks inherent in whether the actual vegetation will come to full fruition or full maturity. And so therefore, the person that is buying it has to assess it in the context of that risk that is assigned here, and not as if it was fully finished and the completed or fully mature produce that you have over here. Achlas smadar, if he ate a smadar, the same stage of the fruit development that we mentioned before, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Ruin Oto, Kiilu Hein Anavim Omdoti Batzer. Since it's already reached that point of maturation, we look at it as if these are grapes that are ready to be picked, and therefore we assess their value, not independently, as the Balei Tosafot point out over here, but based on the value against the underlying land that is there. V'chamim orim odim ata kama ita yafa v'kama yafa. Chamim again say, no, it's all relative. What was it worth beforehand, and what is it worth now? Balei Tosafot make an interesting point over here that Rabbi Yeshua's shita is unique to grapes. He says, v'afilum nitkalkel ha-mishyuret. Even if the remainder of the vines in that area or the grapes in that area get ruined and don't come to full maturity, mishaleim kanavim amdot lipatzer. You assess the value based on fully mature grapes that had come to full fruition. It's only true by a vineyard or a vine, because sometimes grapes right next to each other, one branch will grow great, and the other branch will be terrible grapes. Even grapes that are in the same section, in the same area, some are great, some are not great. Therefore, we don't look at the residual. On the other hand, when you're dealing with grains, they tend to have the same fate, the whole field. So if it's all bad, it's all bad. If it's all good, it's all good. So therefore you look at the remainder that grew and look at it. Well, did it grow to full maturation? Did it grow to garner full pricing? Then whatever you damage, you will assign that pricing to. If, on the other hand, there was a problem with the growth in that field and it was stunted or there was something wrong with the maturation process, we'd assume the same thing would be true of the patch that was damaged, and you only pay based on the impaired value. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Bamed Dvarim Omerim, Bezman Shachla, Luluvei Gefanim, Bihirei Teinim. That's only true when he ate the Luluvei Gefanim, he ate the green shoots of the vines, Bihirei Teinim, and the shoots of the figs. Rashi says over here, Luluvei Gefanim, is Ashkol Nireh B'chanitata Gfanim. It's at the time that the grapes already are reaching a point of maturity, Vidikar, and then they are visible. I mean, it's beyond the point of a smadar, but it's not yet at the point where it's fully mature and ripened. But it's enough where it's visible, the fruits already visibly developing on the vine, and the same is true with the Yichurei Te'enim. So then you would assess them like the Chachamim say, kama hayta yafa v'kama yafa. Aval achla pagim or boser, if he ate pagim, which is in Teina, or boser, which is the stage in the Anavim, shem kupula lavan, as Rashi says, v'abe kipirot gmurim, roim otam kilu anavim omdot lipatzer. So that you look at them as being fully finished, and you assess them at their full maturation and final value. So that's what Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says, that if it's in an early stage, the development of the fruits, then you assess them like the Chachamim say, kama hayta yafa v'kama yafa. And then if the fruits already reached a full level of maturation, which is similar to Rabbi Shimon Shita in our Mishnah, and this is Rabbi Shimon, then we look at them as separate entities and we value them based on that separate entity. And that's what the Balei Tosfot would say over here. Even though we look at them as if they are fully at maturation, you still assess the value, not independently, not inherently, but on the basis of the land. You look at how much is the land with a fully mature item on it, and how much is the land without that fully mature item on it. Because even Rabbi Shimon over here, who says that we look at these as if they are picked, or as if they are independent, that's only when they become independent of the field or the item that they are growing on, because of the fact that they are fully mature fruits. On the other hand, if they still need the field that they're growing on, and they still are dependent on the field that they're growing on, then you have to assess the value against the field upon which they are growing. So, first of all, everybody here agrees that the assessment process is done by looking at the value of the field with this item and the value of the field without this item. What the item is, that's what they're arguing about. The Chachamim say it's whatever it is up to, the maturation process. We said, look at the value at that point in time. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, once it reaches a certain threshold, we look at it as if it's fully ripened. And Rabbi Yeshua himself says, once it's fully ripened, then you for sure have to look at it as a separate entity. You can't look at it as being a part of the field itself. So now, Gemara says, Tani mi'at v'chamim rim lo'itah kameh hayta yafa v'kameh yafa. The Chachamim in each of these bavot of this braita say, well, we look at it, its relative value. How much was it worth with the damage? How much was it worth without the damage? Below Tani b'shishim, and never is the word shishim mentioned once in this braita. Elamayit l'chalameimar b'shishim. When it says, you look at the value, how much it's worth with it, how much it's worth without it, the Chachamim obviously embedded in their statement is this idea that it's done against a benchmark of 60. So even though it's not mentioned explicitly in the braita, we still assume that it is 60 times. Hachinami b'shishim. Similarly over here, the Braita that is mentioned about Mazik Begufo, where the Adam does Hezek himself, even though it never mentions the 60, it still means 60 times. And therefore, Abaye says, if that's your source, Rova, for causing a differentiation between Adam Amazik versus Mono Amazik, that Braita is not proof for the fact that you don't use 60 times. Because we find the same thing by Mono Amazik, where it never says 60 times, but it's implied or implicit in it. And so it's over here, even though it's not mentioned, you could have suggested that it was implied the 60 times. And so I'm not sure why you were questioning Rav Nachman as to why he paskined it's against 60 times, even though it's Adam HaMazik, because I don't see where you differentiate between Adam HaMazik versus Mimono HaMazik. Okay, we're going to stop here, 10 lines down on the top of Nuntet Amud Aleph.